Hello, everybody, and welcome to Microbrew Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. My buddy on the other line is Kurt Hoge. He, of course, covers the Milwaukee Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he is coming to you live and in person from a very special location. Tell me, Kurt, where you are situated right this second.
The good listeners of Microbrew, the faithful brew, JR, they already know. They know where I'm coming to you from. I got the trees behind me. I got the NBA Finals on the TV. I'm sitting on a nice outdoor recliner. Buddy, I am on the patio.
To be clear, the patio that you built with your own two hands. That is where you're seated right now.
And important to note, few other people's two hands. I had a little bit of help from my pal Ross. He helped me dig the hole for like 2 hours one Saturday. We got a lot done then in those 2 hours. And then my friend Joe, shout out to Joe. Not listening to this. He helped me put all the pavers down and finish leveling the sand. We worked for about 4 hours yesterday, and then I finished the sucker off with about another 4 hours of work. Folks,
incredible.
It feels good to do things with your own two hands. And with that said, I'm not going to do anything else. No more projects.
I like to think there's a hierarchy of friends. The friends who help you build a patio in your own backyard, they're really high up there, probably at the highest point. And then right below that, Kurt, is someone like me, someone who is so honest with you, so as to say, there's no way on God's green earth I'm going to help you with that patio. See,
correct.
even though I am useless to your project, I'm so upfront with you. You and I, we have this connection. And I can tell you. I can tell you these things. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to say, oh, you know, I'll see if I got some time. No, I made it clear. No, that's not for me. Thank you. No, but I'm so happy for you.
That is the next tier of friend, is the people that are like, oh, well, I'll let you know. And then they will come drink on your patio, enjoy a 100% fire on your patio. Tier two also, of course,
is invited
a beverage of their choice on said patio.
I am interested in taking you up on that. I am interested.
We could do a live microbrew from my patio.
Why aren't we doing that right now? I'm in my usual basement. I need to be on that patio. We can have one microphone. We just hang out with each other on your patio, probably drinking beverages, although probably not too many because this is technically work, and watching the NBA Finals. I don't know why I didn't think of this. I've made a grave mistake.
Well, you see, you have a family.
I do.
I do too. But my family, I can see her room. She's asleep. My baby.
Oh, God.
She's already been a baby. She's 3 years old, though.
Bless.
But my baby is asleep.
I spent a lot of time with my family. I watched 5 softball games, 2 soccer games that is just starting since Friday. And I have, in fact, also attended a Brewers game with my family. Somehow, we made it to Saturday night's game in which Caleb Durbin hit a walk-off home run. We're going to have to talk about that game. We're going to have to talk about this week in general. That game, I can't wait to tell you the story that involves my son and Caleb Durbin's home run. I can't believe that we made it there. But Kurt, it's great timing because I have an interview. I have an interview that's going to be tacked down at the end of this episode with none other than Caleb Durbin. I happened to talk to him Friday at the start of this homestand. Saturday, of course, is the big walk-off winner. It's great. Serendipitous. I'm very proud of the serendipity at all. What is perhaps less appetizing for Milwaukee Brewers fans is that Caleb Durbin's home run, the one that won the game, first pitch of the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth inning against San Diego on Saturday night, was the only extra base hit for the Milwaukee Brewers in this 3-game series against the San Diego Padres. They had no doubles. They had no triples. They had one home run. That was it. Caleb Durbin won the game. The offense, woof, not a great one. A 1-0 loss on Sunday, a 2-0 loss on Friday. In between, they struggled, actually, most of Saturday before pulling it off. Kurt, are you taking a picture? Are you taking a picture as we're doing this podcast? I'm trying to segue, and you're taking our picture, aren't you?
You're talking. I'm going to take a pic for my Insta story. Keep going.
That's a very good point. I mean, you're on a patio. You have a right to make this about you. I love that. The Brewers offense was really bad. Now the week started off fine. They won a game over the Reds. They won for the 8th consecutive game. That was a nice setup for them. And then they only lost on Tuesday because TJ Friedl robbed a home run that would have tied the game. An incredible finish. I bet you can probably guess how I'm going to tie that into Remember When, which is coming up later in this episode. They have a really nice day Wednesday, a day game. A lot of people chipping in. They had four extra base hits in that game. That wasn't bad. And then they went into the cold deep freeze again that this offense is sometimes prone to. And Kurt, I just wonder if you look at this offense and you say to yourself, you know what? They just won 8 games in a row. We know this team can win games, whether it's a combination of defense, pitching, speed, and not the offense. I don't know. Or maybe they have just enough offense. But Kurt, I look at that offense. I see them in San Diego and I'm like, how is this team going to make it to the playoffs? Even though they're now 4 games above 500, even though they've gotten out of that little sort of mini hole that they were in. How does this offense
you know the answer to your own question.
The answer is they won't
to the playoffs by scoring enough runs. The pitching staff is once again nails. They have
incredible
done the thing. They have put to it looks like a patchwork staff between the bullpen and the rotation, but the dang thing is working once again. So JR, that is the answer to your question. I think you knew that, though. I think what you're really asking is something else, and it's can they do that? Can they score enough runs consistently? And we don't particularly, I mean, we have a pretty dang good idea of what this offense is, but that doesn't mean we have a pretty dang good idea of what this team is going to do over the next 90 games. But I wasn't on the pod last week to bask in the Brewers win streak with you.
Sad.
I'm sure you and Todd did that with aplomb. But I'm not like going to deviate too far from the things that we said a few weeks ago when there was a little more gloom around the Milwaukee Brewers.
We thrive in gloom.
I still don't believe in this offense entirely.
I mean, I don't believe in it at all. I know they got hot. And the nice thing about a winning streak is
because you're such a hater.
I'm a hater.
You have never once believed.
To be clear, I hate a lot of things.
That's not true. You did believe in the Milwaukee Brewers at one point for about 30 minutes last year in October. Do you remember?
I do remember what was taken from us, Kurt, I believed, after Sal Frelick's home run that I predicted. I think, you know, the winning streak is good because it gives you breathing room, right? Like you rattle off enough wins in a row and suddenly again you are an above 500 team and you can afford to hover. Teams hover all the time, like the Brewers have basically done all year, except for that winning streak. And then they'd get hot. And if they can get hot again, that would be enough to be a playoff team. Like they would be in conversation. They were flirting with being in playoff position after that run. And I really thought at the beginning of the year, the pitching was such a huge problem. I was hating on that. And I was wrong. Like the pitching to this point has been so good. And you just look at this series, how great Chad Patrick pitched, how great Jose Quintana pitched. I mean, these guys aren't going deep into games, but they're doing their job. Freddy Peralta on Sunday. And none of those guys left with any offensive support whatsoever. And that's just got to be so frustrating. This team has a couple guys that I want to talk about specifically at the bottom of the order who are just like, their Statcast pages are horror stories. I don't want to disparage one of them because one of them hit a walk-off home run. One of them hit the extra base hit in this series. You've got William Contreras.
Right. Who I
think William Contreras is just really struggling. Jackson Churio has been struggling a little bit. Rhys Hoskins over the last couple of weeks has gone back backwards kind of after obviously having such a nice start to the season. Those guys have to do it. You know, it's not about the fringes of the roster. It's about the main guys in the middle. And there's no trade that is going to fix that. There's no like, you know, maybe they find a third baseman or a shortstop at the trade deadline or something. I don't know, but that doesn't fix the, if your main guys aren't mashing, then you're kind of sunk. This team is like second to last in extra base hits. Last I checked earlier today, second to last behind only the Pirates are worse in extra base hits. That's not going to get it done. That's not how you get Capone. There's no way that I think that offense can get a team to the playoffs, no matter how good the pitching is, which is good, but let's not pretend like this is a frontline staff. Like it's solid for sure. Great, solid staff. But you know, this isn't like, we're not talking about Cy Young candidates across the board here. So yeah, I don't
know.
Not yet. I feel like we just talk about this every week. And I think ultimately what I do want to know is, you know, because those hammers, they just have to get better. How much longer can they do this with Joey Ortiz and Caleb Durbin? Because if the hammers aren't producing, you do have to get it on the fringes. And Durbin's been better lately, so he's not really the guy I'm thinking about. It's Ortiz, who's playing a credible defensive shortstop, but the offense is so bad.
Is he?
Okay. Not to the point that it overcomes an OPS that's below 500.
So I talked to Matt Erickson about this in Philadelphia. Matt Erickson, the Brewers infield instructor, and one of the wonderful secrets that I will let you in on, let the people in on a little bit, is when you feel like you're in need of a really good quote, a guy who's just going to give it to you honest, Matt Erickson is absolutely one of the guys. But also, you got to pick and choose your spots. Because if you go to the well too many times, JR, the well, it's not like the well runs out of water. It just tells you it doesn't want to give you water. This is a very weird well where they give you only a certain amount of tickets. So I talked to Matt Erickson in Philly about the defense in general, and we hit on a bunch of different guys. And you got the Joey Ortiz, and I sort of posited a question as, hey, the defensive metrics, like DRS had him at, I think, -5 runs at that point. They don't like him. When I watch him, my wife is currently laughing at me because I'm recording a podcast on the patio. She's standing at the door and mocking me for this. Anyway,
you're right. It's perfect.
This is 30 years old. This is what this is. Where were we? Joey Ortiz, he said he kind of agreed with this defensive metrics, JR, the DRS. I'm not sure where OAA has him. But as you know, we don't talk too much about OAA on this podcast. Anyway, but Matt Erickson said that Joey Ortiz's first step is not there, and kind of explained a little bit of like why that is. And he's jumping too high. You want to get a little bit off the ground, but he's jumping too high, and that's slowing his first step down because the ball's hit and he's like in the air instead of on the ground. Very nuanced defensive things, but that is sort of inhibiting him, something that the metrics see and the Brewers metrics see. I'm not sure if DRS exactly sees that, but the Brewers metrics for sure do, which is kind of a little glimpse into like how good and how advanced that their stuff probably is compared to what we can see. But that is a bit of the understory to Joey Ortiz's defense. And then the understory to his offense, JR, is that his OPS is below 500.
Enough said. If the defense isn't truly elite, that's already a problem. The Brewers, of course, they win because of their defense. If you're telling me that the defense can't even be called that, like even better than average defense, which I think it looks good.
It looks good. And he is making, I do think he is underrated a bit by the metrics because he has made every single play that he like probably has a decent chance at making. He's made every single one.
Yeah.
And then he's just not getting to a couple of balls where he'll like dive and get it and then drop the ball or like all these little nuanced things. But I still want to say that there's a lot more in there, and I would not be surprised to see Joey Ortiz have, say, a 670 OPS the rest of the year. Would you take that, or would you say that's not enough? That's not enough. Go get a bat. Go get a short.
I mean, if third base is still what Caleb Durbin is giving you over the course of the year, and you're still getting kind of this level of production from across the board, I would say it's not enough because at some point you got to get more from someone. And you know, as I talk about those hammers, you know, Christian Yelich has still been pretty good. Like Christian Yelich has been very good recently. So he's performing and they're still not scoring runs, you know, like they need more and maybe shortstop is a logical place to get it. Now we've talked in the past about how easier said than done, right? They don't have candidates in the farm system that are ready to go. Cooper Pratt is not, he's in Double A. He's not necessarily ready to go yet.
No. And he's doing the Double A thing where like he goes through it.
Right. Of course.
It's up and down. You know, it's not like he's terrorizing Double A. No.
And I think he'll be very good. And I think he's certainly in the cards for next season for sure. And maybe even the end of this season. But you know, right now, I mean, again, it would have to be, you have to go outside and get somebody, but we've been saying that about third base. And again, completely easier said than done. They don't have a lot of guys, but at some point the problem becomes so obvious that it has to be addressed. You have to try other things. I mean, Andrew Monasterio is not a starting shortstop in Major League Baseball, at least, you know, not he doesn't necessarily fix the problem.
He's a pinch runner, though.
We're going to talk about that, Kurt. You wrote about that. JSOnline.com. If you want to take a look back at Sunday's game, it's the first Sunday loss the Brewers have had since this is the first time in 8 weeks. So worth noting, because we will note it. But man, I don't know, Kurt. And Caleb Durbin is another one. Now, again, recently, you know, now is probably not the time because he's been a little bit better lately, and he is a rookie and he's finding himself. But there is a profile here for both of these guys. Their Statcast pages are ice cold blue when it comes to hard contact and some of the things that you think you really want to see, especially from a corner infielder, especially from Durbin, but also shortstop. You know, if you're not getting it from third base, you got to get it from shortstop or vice versa. And they were able to do that with Willy Adames last year. And at some point, the numbers are just so bad. You just have to say to yourself, they have to find another way to supplement this offense. And Joey Ortiz, you know, he had a couple hits this weekend, but like it's light contact, it's easy out stuff, and I don't know how much longer they want to do this. I don't know how much longer they can.
I think Joey Ortiz is still hitting into some bad luck. He scalded a baseball for a lineout double play because Caleb Durbin had a toot plane on Sunday, and then Joey Ortiz hit some other balls hard in Cincy, I think it was, maybe at the end of the last homestand, or Philly. There have been hard hit balls, and he's seems like him and Jackson Churio and Bryce Turang a little bit are running into a lot of bad luck, and the offense in general is going through, like, even though they scored some runs in Cincinnati, yes, they're going through a bad luck week. Two more thoughts on the offense. What I think I want to say is, like, if I had to pick between third base and shortstop to upgrade, I would upgrade third base. And granted, on one hand, you have some internal options at third base, where if you upgrade shortstop and this Durbin thing just doesn't work out, doesn't turn a corner, you could go Siegler. Oliver Dunn is really not the answer.
He's struggling so badly at AAA.
Maybe your answer is Anthony Siegler is the answer internally if you're going to look there. Whereas shortstop, I'm sorry, Freddy Zamora, 0% of me wants to see that over, like, continuing to let Joey Ortiz get some run. So there's different ways to look at it, I guess. But if I had to choose to upgrade one, I'm in the market probably is better for third base too. But I'm choosing to upgrade third base and letting it ride with Joey Ortiz and praying for that, like I said, that 670, that 680 OPS and good defense. Because, I mean, if we got that, if we had said Joey Ortiz would do that all year, that's like a two-win player probably at shortstop, 2.5 win maybe, and you absolutely take that, and it's such a big upgrade too over what Joey Ortiz is doing right now. Like, mathematically, it has to get better, right? Right?
We've been saying that for how many weeks can we say that before you just have to face facts? I mean, and go back to last year, we thought it was the neck injury that really held him down. Well, I mean, there's way more evidence of Joey Ortiz not being able to hit big league pitching or hit it hard.
Yeah, I mean, there's
I mean, he can hit it. He doesn't strike out a bunch. I don't want to suggest that he's like swinging and missing. He's not, but
there are definite flaws in the swing. He's laid on a lot of balls. It's a little long. If he's doing damage on the baseball, it's like opposite field. He's late. The Brewers in general pull air, are dead last in baseball. They do not pull the baseball in the air. Caleb Durbin, kind of ironically, does it a lot, but doesn't do it with power.
Right.
So it is not a skill that they have shown an ability to teach. William Contreras has kind of stopped doing it since he got here as well. So now we're getting into a whole, like, wider discussion about Brewers big league hitting development. And I'm not really in the mood for that right now, unless you want to talk about Keston.
I don't want to talk about Keston here today. Although shouts to the Rockies, they get Orlando Arcia and Keston here on a team, and suddenly they go on a little bit of a winning streak. Good for them, Colorado Rockies.
And then they got swept, but they did win three. So good for the Rockies.
Yes. Winning streak for them is three games.
I did have a second point there that I alluded to, teased. And it's, I don't know if there's legs to this, but this is maybe my sports radio take that I'm just going to say.
Oh, God.
In the game against Jesus Luzardo, where the Brewers just absolutely destroyed him.
Yes.
They came out aggressive as can be. They came out like ready to swing the bat. They weren't sitting there kind of on their thumbs, focused on getting his pitch count up and like making him work and getting him out of the game and like trying to score runs with a bunch of small ball. They talked about it after the game too. Like their approach was, we're going to be aggressive against this guy. And when he gets us, when he throws something in the zone early, we're attacking. And they absolutely swarmed him. And that is not the norm with the Brewers. It's tricky, right? Because like the quote unquote strength of this team is they see a lot of pitches, they can get on base, they walk a little bit, and they'll give you a tough at bat. But what's the correlation of grinding tough at bat teams to good offenses?
I don't know.
I just feel like maybe they should be more aggressive like they were in that day instead of kind of what we see a lot of the time where they're sort of focused on getting guys' pitch counts up.
The Brewers had base runners all weekend long against San Diego, and it just got to a point, though, because there's no slug. It's just you got to get three hits in an inning, and good luck. That's hard to do, really hard to do. So even against pitchers that most people probably haven't heard of, the San Diego starters, they just couldn't put runs together. They'd get runners on. They'd get walks. Like you said, I think, too, this is one of the things standing in the way of Brock Wilkin, one of my favorite prospects in this organization. He's still at Double A, but at some point you'd like to think would still be an option at third base. He has had a little bit of a bounce back this season, but he primarily just like he takes a lot of walks. He's a very patient hitter, which is good. And he does hit for some power, but he also just kind of, he's much like these other Brewers. Like he's not doing maybe as much damage as he could, I guess, because he's taking his time. He's waiting for that perfect pitch. And I mean, that's I'm not saying it's all the same thing, you know, that it's just a different player, but you're right. You need somebody who's just going to go up there and mash, man. Go up and do some damage.
Yeah.
You can't chip your way through this.
This is what I was trying to get to as a very dumb amateur numbers person with some of this swing decision stuff that we talked about this offseason. And it's that, like, yeah, not chasing is great. That is a fantastic skill to have, because when you don't have it, we see what happens. But you gotta have some selective aggression in there. Maybe not even selective aggression, just straight up aggression. And if you're taking a lot of pitches in the zone, which the Brewers do, and that's like, it's not necessarily so much, I don't know how much of it's a Brewers thing and how much of it is these are just what their hitters do. They have a lot of patient hitters. You're gonna miss some chances. And part of that is like, you think about Jackson Chourio and why you can live with some of the valleys that you're going to get, especially early in his career, because he's flailing at pitches. The dude does not take fastballs in over the plate. He is up there to create damage, and you need different approaches in your lineup, and the Brewers for sure have that. But I don't know if I just think there might be more room for it. I don't know. I'm not a hitting coach. We are not hitting minds. We are rubes. And these are our sports radio takes.
Let's continue to be rubes and talk about the pitching staff. Brandon Woodruff had a setback this week. Setback maybe is not the word that they would prefer to use, but he was pretty close to the big leagues, it seemed. And then he took a line drive off his elbow. I don't know how that's not a setback. It wound up, you know, he's back. He came back with the team. He's going to rest for a little bit and then essentially return to his rehab start. He's going to basically get some time reset again. He'll have to make a couple more starts. Now, that stinks. It's bad timing. He had this ankle thing earlier that slowed him down. But Kurt, I am much more concerned about other things. And that velocity is not even getting to 90 miles an hour. And if it's not getting to 90 miles an hour, it doesn't matter if he has a setback, because he's not better than any of the guys that they have starting right now. It's Dallas Keuchel speed that you're seeing in his minor league rehab start. And we talked about he's such a great veteran pitcher. We know that he could probably still get some outs at the big league level, but he wasn't throwing sub 90 at the start of his rehabs this year. He wasn't throwing 98, but he was still below where you wanted him to be, but he's gone further south. And so this elbow thing is separate, but I mean, I don't think that he really could have started for the Brewers, even if he had come through that rehab outing clean, because he doesn't have the velocity to compete in the big leagues right now. I mean, it's really concerning. Yeah. Right?
Well, so, I mean, he is hitting 90. He's probably sitting 90 once he gets settled in, I would say. But, like, he came out touching 88, 89, and then he would, like, get up to 90, 91 in his second inning of work, and that was about it. So this is interesting, JR, because there are some people on the Brewers, including Pat Murphy, who seem to believe, at least they're saying, that when Woodruff comes back, like the 89-90 is not what they're expecting when he gets here. And of course, I think we all probably would assume there's going to be a little uptick in the major leagues compared to minor league rehab starts when you've done, what, 9 of them now? The competitive juices are not going to be there in those starts for sure. It's like worse spring training because it's Hotel California. Buddy, you can't leave. But I'm also like, I want to practice some caution about, Tyrese Halliburton just had an over and back violation. You hate to see that. I'm watching the finals here on my patio, by the way. I am expressing as we preach, with Brewers injuries and injury updates, which is relevant here. We preach discernment. We preach, some cautious pessimism, I would say, about it. And like, I'll believe Woodruff's going to sit 94 when I see him sitting 94, because he's like not even rearing back and touching it in these minor league starts. Really. It doesn't fully track why he like is, I don't understand shoulder injuries, but like we saw it in spring training when he was pitching a minor league game in the big league stadium, his first quote unquote game action. I think he hit 93 that day. And then he hit 94 in the next game, maybe 95. I think he might have touched 5 against the Guardians in that game. And it's just been a rollback since then. So I'm definitely being guarded about buying into the stuff playing up. I do think there are ways for him to, like, if he's throwing 92, 93, I think it can work. I think we have always underrated him as a pitcher and might be doing so a little bit now. But we've got to see it sit there first and got to see him healthy. And of course, like, you just feel terrible for the guy. I mean, he's making money, you know, so there's always that caveat of it too. But like, at the end of the day, it's a human being who has the pressure of performing and wants to be out there performing and doing what he loves. And it's kind of being stripped away from him right now. And I probably should have led with that, but I think that is also what comes to mind right now in this situation.
Yeah. This is really tough. He's been 18 months without baseball, you know, big league baseball. And like you said, Hotel California, getting stuck playing, you know, playing against minor leaguers. And I guess, you can understand, is he really going to be, you know, amped up to throw 94 miles an hour when he's, you know, taking on guys that are, you know, that are, I don't want to say beneath him, but that's the career he has. He's a big leaguer through and through. So, I know this is really tough, but I feel like every day puts us closer to a greater percentage chance that we don't see him this year. Not because I think that there's like, you know, it's not that I think the trajectory is to not pitch this year. I think it's still in there. It's just, you know, I don't know, like bad vibes around it, you know?
Okay. So a follow-up to that is this right. There was this talk of Chad Patrick, not just talk, like Pat Murphy said it basically, that Chad Patrick would be the one that get optioned down when Quintana and Woody come back. Let me be very clear about this. Chad Patrick under no circumstances besides getting hurt should be allowed to leave this rotation or should be told he is doing anything but taking the ball every 5 days. Freddie Peralta might be this team's all-star and took a no-hit bid into the sixth inning on Sunday and has generally like more than lived up to the bill, even though I think we're frustrated with him often with his starts. But Chad Patrick right now is the guy that takes the ball and I feel like the best about. Just, I know what I'm going to get. And he, I mean, frankly, he's the National League like rookie of the year front runner, or at least he should be. You just cannot do that. I cannot take you seriously if you send that guy down.
And so we'll see how this shakes out in like 2 weeks. Quinn Priester is obviously pitching great right now as well, but you're going to have to find a way to get creative because you got to keep all these guys up basically that are pitching well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they didn't sign Jose Quintana for half a season. The Priester DL Hall thing doesn't feel like a permanent solution, but it has yielded good results. And then it's Aaron Civale, who's been fine. I mean, you can't really complain about it. Quinn Priester, like you said, has been pitching a lot better. I think it's Aaron Civale's spot if Brandon Woodruff comes back, and that means cutting into the depth. So the Brewers are not going to do that unless they're positive, you know, like unless they can find a trade partner for Aaron Civale, you know, I don't expect that's the case. So,
well, maybe they can.
I mean, they did it last year to get Aaron Civale.
They'll have another 30 days with Brandon Woodruff on a rehab stint.
Well, and here's why it makes sense, because if Woodruff doesn't work out, you do have Jacob Mizorowski, who we'll talk about here in a second.
Oh, we got to talk ready about for the big that. Leagues.
I mean, he's ready for the big leagues. Again, it's not what you need. You need hitting. But like if they right now have more starters than spots. We haven't. And Logan Henderson can absolutely pitch in the big leagues because he's just done it. He's had four great starts. So they have plenty of weapons in that rotation. Brandon Woodruff right now is like the ninth option. Really, the ninth is too strong, but eighth? No, ninth.
I think. I mean, if you're ranking like, if you just had an OTP simulation and you like, there's no context to any of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, Woodruff's probably not in your like top five preferred starters as he is right now.
So Jacob Mizorowski is there. He had another Owning Souls performance this weekend, and. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are now in the point where Super 2 is probably not a concern anymore. So subtract that from the equation. I don't know though. Like going back to Logan Henderson, I don't know because Henderson's already on the 40 man. If they're gonna rush Mizorowski, I mean, because they have all these options, and rush is not the word because he deserves to be here. He is a big leaguer and a difference making big leaguer, and it is just a matter of time. But right now things are really crowded, and I don't know. It's frustrating because I know that Jacob Mizorowski has the potential to be markedly better than a lot of guys who are throwing the baseball for the Milwaukee Brewers, but the guys who are throwing the baseball for the Milwaukee Brewers are doing the job. So it's really difficult to figure out how this situation is going to play out from here.
Well, JR, it is difficult to figure it out because like you get into the numbers game and it's just difficult. You're not going to get rid of Quintana. The bullpen is sort of kind of in a really good rhythm right now with guys in their roles and the guys with options. There's not a ton, but you don't want to get rid of them. Maybe Grant Anderson for Miz, I guess, but the messaging has. So what I'm curious about and have kind of looked into a little bit is what would they like consider flipping his role a little bit into the multi-inning hybrid, like the Hader thing that we saw when Hader came up, what DL Hall is doing a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that does not seem to be what has, like, I do not believe that is necessarily the plan right now, maybe later in the year to monitor his innings. They could do it kind of what they did last year, but a little longer of outings. And what's always been communicated, not only to us in the media, but to Mizorowski as well, is that they want to call him up as a starter. When they bring him up here, they want him to start games.
Yeah.
Obviously, circumstances can change that, but as it stands now, that seems to be the plan. But where things also get interesting is is that effectively, here you go. We'll put some microbrew special info out there. Nothing too fancy, nothing too mind-blowing. But like what's been relayed to Mizorowski effectively is that they expect him to be pitching for them. They expect to call him up by the end of this month in some capacity. He's proven he's ready. Obviously, the Brewers know that. You're running into a game. Now that Super 2 is passed, now you're running into a game of where does he fit? And that's
what you have to figure out. Obviously, like, injuries happen all the time.
Yes.
But if that is sort of the expectation, if that is kind of what the parties are thinking about, and he's your top prospect, your number two prospect, your best pitching prospect, one of the hottest pitching prospects in baseball right now, you kind of just want to see it. And it, like, if you're a little eager to do it too, it would be hard to like not honor that. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, because like, even with that, I could, right, you can see a world in which that doesn't happen simply because of the numbers.
Yes. Do you remember Kurt Nestor Cortez when he pitched for the Milwaukee Brewers?
I spoke to Nestor last week. Just to catch up with him.
Great, because if Woodruff is the ninth option, Cortez is the 10th. And I, again, injuries happen, but like, this is the guy that they traded Devin Williams for, and they really no longer have a spot for him, and he's been hurt anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I don't know. There's a few people that I have on my missing persons chart. You know, Blake Perkins, we heard, is finally running without pain, so maybe there's an opportunity for him to get going. But like, the Brewers don't, I don't know if they really are lacking the defensive outfield option, especially with Isaac Collins doing really good work in left field.
Yeah.
And Isaac Collins in center field. Mm-hmm. Isaac Collins is of the guys that have performed well above expectations. I think it's Hoskins for the bounce back and Frelick, I guess, and Isaac Collins. I mean, that's a guy who's really delivered above and beyond his station. But you know, Nestez, I don't know if we're going to hear from him again. I mean, you're going to tell me because you've talked to him. Tyler Black, who is now finally getting into some of the Arizona Complex League, so perhaps there's an opportunity for him going forward. I actually think there's probably a better path to the big leagues for him than there is for some of these other guys, because the position side, you kind of have those couple extra roster spots. And then Garrett Mitchell, who is, of course, also part of that outfield picture, and we haven't heard from him in a while, so I could ask about all those guys. I don't want to spend too much time on each one because we're already pretty deep into this podcast, but
no, that's all right.
What, is Nestor Cortez coming back, man? What's up with that?
Well, theoretically he's doing this is not theoretically coming back, he's doing a high cardio throwing program basically right now, which is where they do, I think they do 3 minutes on, 7 minutes on, and then 3 minutes on, 3 minutes on, and there's breaks in between, but they're throwing from 90 feet or 120 feet for those. So it's pretty high intensity, and he just started to like feel good in that last week, I believe it was. He had a good week. So the next step is then progressing to a mound, and then, you know, throw a couple of those, and then, okay, you touch and feel in the mound, a bullpen, and then you got to do the rehab stint, which, you know, you would assume he's building up spring training style again, so that'll be a whole month,
dude,
mid to late July. But also within that, the elbow injury, it's a bit wonky to me because there is not a new development. This is the same injury he was dealing with, and also question mark, the Brewers knew he was dealing with, like, the elbow looks, according to what Nestor was saying, the elbow looks essentially the same as it did at the start of the year when he was dealing with this a little in spring training, was dealing with that at the end of last year. Doesn't look like it requires surgery, but he's like definitely pitching through some damage in the elbow. And is it going to heal up with rest? I think that's the hope. But he's just starting to throw without pain. So maybe that shows you it did heal up, but we'll see on that front. I'm also still, you know, I'll withhold my specific timeline expectations on Cortez's injury.
Man, he's a free agent after this season. The Brewers traded Devin Williams, who is back to being closer for the New York Yankees because of an injury there, for a guy who has given you two starts and is a super huge question mark, who had some injury stuff, and you only traded for the 1 year of him. And Caleb Durbin, who is not a third baseman, but has been asked to play third base, and it's, you know, I don't want to shortchange what he could be, but it's not looking like they got a lot for that deal. It's looking like
I still think the process of acquiring Cortez, who, if healthy, I think would have pitched just fine for this team this season. And rotation depth, as we have seen, is very important. And the Brewers did not have a ton of it at that point.
For sure. Agreed.
So it could have been. I still don't hate that idea, but the medical situation does make you question a little bit of, like, you kind of traded for, frankly, damaged goods. And you just kind of hoped the elbow would heal, and it has not. Tyler Black, yes. We could wrap up some updates. He might be going to Nashville next week if he can get through a couple more days in Arizona feeling good. He had a little setback. And then he could be in Nashville. I think Wednesday is the hope there. I don't remember the other players.
Garrett Mitchell.
Garrett Mitchell and Perkins are kind of on the same timeline, July, maybe mid-July. And is that it?
Yeah, yes. Jefferson Caro, by the way, in Nashville. So there's a catching prospect who's very much worth keeping an eye on. Still regarded as one of the best prospects in this organization for sure, coming off of shoulder surgery. So he will meet Tyler Black there as we see what happens with those guys. Tyler Black, like I said, there's a pathway if he plays well. If he can find him, especially if he can work out in a corner outfield spot in addition to the infield stuff, which is always an adventure. If he can hit the ball, like, they can find a spot for him. This team, Daz Cameron has been on this team and plays very sparingly. You know, Andre Monasterio is here for depth and can play multiple positions, but, like, it's not like they have a lineup of mashers coming off the bench. They do not. So I feel like there's still room for him to find a spot here, but it's going to come down to some performance that we haven't seen in recent as recent months with the Brewers. Real quickly, before we get to three up, three down, two quick questions. One, can Chad Patrick win National League Rookie of the Year? And number two, why doesn't Pat Murphy trust Aaron Ashby?
Oh, JR, I love you. yes, he can. Have you seen National League Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, there's nobody. There's Wisconsin's own Drake Baldwin playing very well, catching for the Atlanta Braves. But, like, if you are in this class of rookies, if you're Chad Patrick making a start every five days and giving your team mm-hmm. 5 to 6 innings of one run mm-hmm. baseball, that's a rookie of the year right there.
Yeah, I mean, simply, I think, okay, so I think Ben Kasparis on the Dodgers, I think that guy rocks. Sure. I think he's awesome and going to be a great pitcher, and some smart team should trade for him if they're sellers at the deadline. Like, Dodgers, you don't need him. Come on, give him to us. But he's also not in this role, like you said, that Chad Patrick is in, where,
right?
I mean, the dude is, if he stays healthy and they don't pull some crazy move of demoting him, he's going to make 31, 32 starts. He's going to mm-hmm. give you 160 innings. If he's doing that at like a 3.4 ERA, which is what, like, his FIP's 3.2 right now, it would be like, there is not a hitter coming remotely close to scratching that. Drake Baldwin's playing part time, so
yes,
I don't know. I feel like Chad Patrick would maybe get the upper hand there. I don't think I have a rookie of the year vote this year. We started, Adam McKelvey was asking me which one I wanted, but I don't think I'm getting rookie. Maybe you will again, at which point you cannot reveal that information and we probably should stop talking about rookie of the year, but we haven't gotten it yet.
Yeah.
So
I don't know who I'm voting for. I don't know, like, what event.
Aaron Ashby.
What's up with
Ashby? Well, we asked Pat Murphy, what's his role? And he said it's leverage long relief, which we did see a bit of in Sunday's game, and he looked really good.
Yeah.
And
leverage long relief, that's made up. That's not a real thing.
Well, it could be what he's good at.
It might be what it's good at. He's good at it. He is good at that. He's good at a lot of things. They should pitch him instead of going to the same other guys over and over and over. If he's on this roster, let him cook. He can cook.
Yeah. And he's cooking right now. So I would like to see Aaron Ashby enter the trust tree, and I would like to see him. Obviously, I would like to see him climb it high. Let that puppy soar. Rob Zastrzyzny's been great, but give me Aaron Ashby.
Zastrzyzny had a rough weekend, a couple rough outings, one that did not cost the team, one that technically did. I mean, a home run to Manny Machado, and as you wrote at jsonline.com, maybe there's a scenario where they bring Freddie back out, although it seemed like Freddie wasn't interested in coming back out, that he had kind of reached his limit you know, Machado is going to burn a guy. And if that's the one run in a game, that's not the fault of a pitcher coming in and giving up a solo home run. That should not cost you a game. But yes, I did think Ashby made sense, at least on Friday night, in the spot where Zastrzyzny pitched and looked a little rough. They're riding their guys. They've been doing it. I mean, Saturday, even when they were losing, all them hammers came into the game, used every single one of them, and it worked out. They got a win. I can't complain about that. But man, it just keeps going on and on and on. Just the same guys over and over and over again. And I just wonder where that, what that brings you as the year goes on. Okay. I think that's it. We're going to move now. Let's move now to three up, three down. The more granular details, the granular details from the week that was, here it is, three up, three down. Kurt, I think I'll go first. Does that sound good? Or do you have something right away?
You are allowed to do that.
Should the Brewers bring Tyrese Halliburton back to throw out that first pitch?
No.
You were just talking about it. He hits the shot in game one to go with all the other shots he's hit in this postseason. He said earlier on the postseason that the Brewers had invited him to throw out a first pitch last year, then changed their minds. And if they changed their minds, I assume because they didn't want to have everybody booing their first pitch guy because Indiana beat the Bucks in the first round of the playoffs. He's done it again. So he's not beloved in Milwaukee. Oshkosh native. I mean, if he wins a title, shouldn't they bring him back? Like, come on. I mean, he's going to get booed. So there's no way around that. But like, the dude has been pretty great. I think they should let him throw a first pitch. I'm sorry. I think they should. I know Giannis is part owner, so maybe that's a bad idea. I don't know.
Okay. Well, like, yeah. Of course, it's a terrible idea. I'm considering not doing the pod next week because of the fact that you threw this idea out there. the content, which is obviously what you care about, the content would be great.
I do.
And he might get booed while throwing the first pitch, and that I don't know if that's ever happened before. So that would be pretty fun. But the Brewers would how would they look in this? The Tyrese Halliburton, the man who uses the phrase aura farming in his press conferences and is certainly in it for the attention. You can't deny that he's balling out, no doubt. But the man is in it for the attention, calls attention to this first pitch thing. No, they
you are,
saying
no.
Like you can't go back to him now and be like, please, Tyrese Halliburton, throw the first pitch. They had Andrew Rohde throw out a first pitch. Brookfield Central, great.
Oh, that's fun.
Matthew Golden was the headliner, but for me, it was the Brookfield Central legend, Andrew Rohde.
Now, yes, formerly of Virginia, and will be joining the Badgers basketball program this upcoming season. I think if Halliburton wins a ring, they should do it. But you're right, they won't, because what do they have to
gain? He's not even from Milwaukee. He can go to a Timber Rattlers game.
Oh, he's not Wisconsinites. Anybody who's stepped foot on Wisconsin soil.
Have they? Haven't seen Bon Iver throw a first pitch out.
I bet Bon Iver wants nothing to do with throwing a first pitch out. I bet that's just inconvenient for Bon Iver. Okay. I don't know.
All right. But Justin Vernon, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
He is one of the, what would you say, 20 best known Wisconsinites. 25.
That's true. That's true. Love
and he is throwing out a first pitch. So I'm disagreeing with your statement about who deserves to throw out first pitches.
Is Justin Vernon from La Crosse or Eau Claire? I have Lacrosse on my
brain. It's Eau Claire.
It is Eau Claire. Yes, because of the Eau Claire the festival that shares its name as well. That
can I tell you something super nerdy?
Mm.
So sure. In high school, shout out Brown Deer, the two, there were two upperclassmen. I can't remember if they were 3 years older than me or 2 years older than me, but they had, they were my newspaper editors as well. JJ and John, I believe were their names. JJ, yeah. JJ and Johnny. Yep. And they had a basketball blog. They were like nerdy Grantland disciples, basically.
Okay.
And they had a basketball blog and they named it Bone Iverson. And it kind of inspired me to keep going in sports writing. And
fascinating.
So I have them to blame.
I do love a good pun, as you know. What is your first item for three up, three down?
Freddy Peralta's usage was weird.
Yes.
He went out for the seventh inning in the game he probably should not have, and then did not go out for the seventh inning in the game he probably should have.
Yeah, that was weird.
He talked his way into the seventh inning in Cincinnati on, is that Tuesday?
Yes.
When it was clear his stuff had, like, fallen off a cliff. He got whiffs on 14 of his first 17 swings or something ludicrous like that. But then over the fourth, fifth, and sixth inning, I think he had two swings and misses, maybe three, but I think it was two. He was lucky to get out of the sixth. Let's just put it that way. And then he kind of forced his way back out for the seventh when the bullpen was a bit rested from the Philly series. I was not a huge fan of that move, and obviously it backfired. And then I thought he was going to face Machado in the seventh on Sunday. And like you referenced, it seemed like Freddie and the Brewers had kind of just decided, like, yeah, his tank is empty. We're going to be done. Which, if that's the case, that's the case. But he was only at 90 pitches, and generally Freddie lasts longer than that. So it was just kind of peculiar.
Yeah, it's kind of gone on. I mean, we talked a lot about bullpen usage the last couple podcasts. It's been a little hit and miss, and obviously a lot of that ties into the starter usage and how deep you let them go. And it's just a little unpredictable with Freddy Peralta. That's just kind of how it goes. That's just how it's always gone with him, I think. You know, this time last week, I thought we were maybe going to get, I wasn't sure what the news would be on Christian Yelich. He had left Sunday's game with a contusion on his hand. And I was shocked that he was in the lineup on Monday in Cincinnati. Obviously a huge sigh of relief, because you figure, well, if he's in the lineup Monday, he's not in bad shape physically. And not only was he in good shape, he hit the game winning home run. It was early in the game, but it was the deciding blow in a 3-2 victory over the Reds to kick things off. That was that eighth straight win. That was awesome to see. Again, Yelich has been hitting the ball harder. He wasn't necessarily great in the San Diego series, but really encouraging signs from him all year. And certainly I was concerned about that hand thing, and it didn't slow him down any. So that has been a promising sign to see. That has been good to see. And a couple game winning home runs now in the last couple weeks, I think three in the last couple weeks, including that walk off grand slam. So solid showing from Christian Yelich.
Yeah. He cooled off in the Padres series, but you never know when it's going to happen with him. I was thinking about this on the drive home, like, I'm not feeling it with this team again. I don't know. I'm even though they had an 8-game win streak, it still didn't sell me on the offense. And then I'm like, you know what? They're probably going to win 2 out of 3 against the Braves, maybe sweep the Cardinals, something like that. Something crazy, though, like a 5-2 week. And then Christian Yelich will be red hot again, and the vibes will be flipped. That seems to be kind of how it goes. Maybe Jackson Chourio's due for a big week.
Yeah. That would be nice. They could use it, because this homestand did not start out promising. All right, what's your number two?
I'll keep going. The Brewers got to face the old mule, JR.
Yes, Wade Miley.
That was pretty cool. It was pretty cool for the Brewers because they absolutely cooked him.
And good.
Wade, we had it on our website. He told it to me. I wrote the story. Wade was interested in coming back with a reunion with the Brewers. He wanted to keep playing, but there was only like 4 teams he would go to. And the stuff is clearly very, very, very diminished. Yeah. And so I think it made all the sense in the world, actually, for the Brewers to not re-sign him. You can, like, Tom Pannone is probably a better option at this point if healthy. But still cool. Still cool to see Wade Miley back out there. One of the good ones. And the Brewers, it didn't go great for Wade. The Brewers got to him pretty good. Isaac Collins hit a home run. I'll double up here. Isaac Collins. Well, we talked about it, though. Isaac Collins was great. Great relative to expectations. Yes, like best jumps in baseball. I did talk to them about that Sunday. That might be coming to JS Online.
Ooh. I forgot who highlighted it, but it was like a routine. Might have been Jim Goulart. Just a routine catch. Early in the weekend, and it had just a crazy low catch probability, like 35%. Now we have our problems with OAA, but the fact is he made it look routine. Nobody would have thought twice about it. He has really been effective. And I mean, right now they don't have a true left fielder, because Christian Yelich is like an exclusive DH, and with
Jake Bowers, aforementioned.
Right. I mean, Jake Bowers is a first baseman. Like, he's doing the best he can. Like, he has been, Jake Bowers has been good. He's been effective. But, you know, defensively, Isaac Collins is really pretty great. And he's done enough offensively to certainly merit his spot on the roster that he has kept all season long. So, impressive stuff. Impressive stuff from Isaac Collins.
Yeah. Before you get to your last one, Jackson Chourio's jumps have gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
That's what you see live. That you can't always see on TV, maybe unlike some of the replays, but live it has looked a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been something I guess you'd expect. Again, like that's an adjuster, and he got back into center field full time, and he has started to adjust to what he has seen. The eye test certainly seems to indicate it's been good. Okay, my number three, the Caleb Durbin walk-off homer. I have a story. It involves my son, my idiot teenage son.
does Owen listen to this?
Absolutely not. But if he did, I tell him this stuff to his face. I'm not ashamed. He was with me at the game, and he caught wind of the fact that I didn't necessarily believe in Caleb Durbin's offensive profile. Now I try to be realistic with some stuff, and again, stay tuned for my interview with Caleb Durbin.
That is such a diplomatic way to put it.
Yeah. Those are the exact words.
Craig Counsell didn't necessarily believe in Kessler's offensive profile.
So anyway, my kid, my kid who sniffs out the pessimism in me and immediately holds me to task when it doesn't play out. He started talking about Caleb Durbin in the fourth inning, in the fifth inning. He's talking about how Caleb Durbin is going to do something amazing. Caleb Durbin hit a ball that turned into it. It was kind of misplayed by Jose Iglesias, and that set up the Brewers in a scoring opportunity. So he was all over that. He's like, I want a Caleb Durbin jersey. This is all before the home run.
You're like, son, turn the two into a one. Jackson Chourio jersey. Come on.
Right. Trevor McGill gives up the lead in the ninth inning with two outs. Luis Arraez kind of dumps a double down the left field line. One ball, Isaac Collins, the rare ball he couldn't get to. And it wound up tying the game. It was kind of this crushing thing. And he like very shortly after that, he's like, you know what? That's okay. It just gives Caleb Durbin a chance to win this game, to hit a walk-off home run. And I'm like, okay, can you just root for him to get on base? Like that's going to be about that's what you should expect. So obviously we get to the bottom half. He says, I owe him $10 if Caleb Durbin hits a home run. I did not agree to this. I do not owe him $10, but he is saying all these things. And the first pitch, the very first pitch that gets thrown in that, you know, it gets up into the air. And I swear, I'm pretty sure he was yelling, I told you so, before that ball even came down. Just, I told you so. He had a really good night, Kurt. It was a really good night for my son, who believes that he has just solved the riddle of of seeing the future. And he's very, very enamored with his particular success and continues to rub my face in it. So
how long until he's a member of the community
that gets lost? Hopefully, you know what? He doesn't have a phone yet. So
that's pretty good. Actually, that's encouraging to hear too. Cause I'm like, I don't want Emma to have a phone until high school. Like, I just don't want that.
So I will say that he does not have a phone. He is going to be in eighth grade. He is probably one of the last kids in his class, if not the last kid to get one. So it is a difficult thing. There's a lot of different kinds of phones. It's not like you're going to be getting, it's not like Emma's first phone is going to be a smartphone, right? There are different, you know, like restricted things that you can get.
You held off until eighth grade.
Yeah. That's
how we're pretty going. Impressive. Now, I got my first phone in eighth grade, and that was in 2008. So, and like, I was late for my friend group then. That's actually, you know what? This has turned into the parenting podcast, JR.
Yeah.
I don't know you pulled this off, but holy smokes, I'm impressed.
Let me tell you another quick story. We were at a game last year, and I was with my family, and I predicted a home run on the next pitch. I believe it was Elvis Peguero. It was one of those outings against the Braves. I think he was brought in with runners on base. I said, this pitch is going to be a home run. And it was. My wife turned to me and said, how did you know that? And I made a joke because I frequently will look at Gamecast when it's late and tense, and Gamecast is often ahead of the broadcast. And I'm just the type of person who likes those extra 30 seconds of heads up before I see what's going to happen. I know it's a sickness. That's fine.
That is one of the dumbest things you do.
I don't vouch for it. I'm not proud of it, but just this is who I am. I know there's others out there, but I'm not proud. Yeah, anyway,
you can't control it. That's fair. Okay.
I told my wife that I saw it on the app, and she got upset with me because for a second, even though we're sitting there watching this game, she believed me because that is what I would do. She's like, I can't believe you do that. I wish you wouldn't do that. And then we laughed about it. Ha ha. So my son, in the aftermath of this Durbin thing, this is very shortly as he's rounding the bases, he looks at me and he says, "I saw it on the app."
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm going to get your child a phone and set him up with a Twitter account to be a part of the community, capital T, capital C, when he turns 17. I feel like that is when he's allowed to enter the community.
Should we have him on the podcast? And actually, that's not happening. That's a terrible idea.
My wife still wants to come on the podcast.
Karen's invited. She's wholeheartedly invited. All right, you got to give me another number three. We got to get closer.
We got to wrap this up. What did we have this week, JR? We had. Am I really gonna do Drew Avins here? Am I really gonna do that?
No, you're not. Come on.
Okay. All right. So by doing that, we did it.
You wrote about them pulling Rhys Hoskins. You could talk about that.
Oh yeah, we never got to that.
No, that was,
you know what, this. I'm going to save that. Have I talked about pinch running in general? Has that ever been my carte blanche on this pod?
I don't believe so.
Okay, I'm going to save it. Emu.
Emu lady. Love that.
How does one get it, a life-size, emu into a baseball game? They won't let you bring a flag into the baseball game. It's very funny what you can and we should just do a list of the things you can and cannot bring into a baseball game. You can bring in a full entree meal and plates. Probably you could probably bring in plates and glassware. No, the knives are going to be a no-go.
Right.
But you can bring in a lot. You can bring in an emu.
Emus are gigantic animals. This is not a life-size emu,
you
but
can't
it is
bring in your
large.
Water bottle.
No, this was not life-size, but it was a very large emu in Friday's game. A stuffed emu that was in the crowd, made its way to the broadcast. Of course, do you think it was hidden in the stadium somehow? Did they bring the emu in parts and assemble it that they were able to get that past security? Because
there are hacks to this. Like, I can get things in the stadium for you that you cannot get in. Right. DM me on Twitter. I take Venmo. Maybe it was some team employee. Maybe they have an emu at their desk.
I think that's
maybe
where we're going.
You snuck it in for someone using your press pass.
I'm not accusing you.
I'm not accusing you, but we can't prove that you didn't not do it.
I am the type of person who would have a stuffed emu. And maybe even bring it to work. I feel like that is there's probably someone else like me who is willing to bring that stuffed emu and make it work.
Yeah,
here are the things we did not get to. Sal Frelick hitting his fourth homer of the year. Sal Frelick, power threat, love that. We did not get to just how much the Brewers own the Cincinnati Reds, but it is becoming a remarkable trend. This is level like the Pirates level back when they were in 2008 or whichever year it was where they lost one game against the Pirates. They were like, I don't know, 18-1 or something outrageous, 17-1. I don't even remember. We did get to Emu Lady, which is on my list here. There was a tapper at the plate that like landed on the plate Saturday in which Sal Frelick got thrown out. I thought that was a wild play. Very interesting, a little controversial, but, from fourth deck, it sure looked like that ball was scooped up right off the top of the plate. Drew Avins is a name that you said. He was signed to a minor league deal. I don't think there needs to be more said at this point. And then Corbin Burnes, former Brewers pitcher, officially out for the year with Tommy John surgery. Really wild stuff. And unfortunately, emboldens kind of the strategy the Brewers have employed with their ace pitchers. They're not going to just, you know, if they're young, they'll sign them to friendlier extensions like they did with Freddie Peralta. But Burnes, they were pretty clearly out on signing him long-term at the very, very start. They trade him last year. He has a great year with Baltimore, and he was off to a phenomenal start with the Diamondbacks, but he's going to be out for a year plus now with that Tommy John surgery. That is very tough. It's very bad news, and it just feels like every elite pitcher is a ticking time bomb. Maybe that's why you get Jacob Izrowski to the big league soon, because you just don't know how long you're going to have these guys. And there's just so many bullets in the holster before they could have to undergo something like that. So that was tough. That stunk.
And yeah. In a weird way, like,
you're crushed for the guys when they go through these injuries, but you're glad that it happened after he got paid.
Yes,
Corbin Burns deserved to get paid after the first 6 years he put in the big leagues. And like, oh well, some owners, like, even if the contract doesn't work out, oh well, some owners giving him the money. They have lots of money to deal with. Super big bummer for him competitively. But I guess the very, very small silver lining is he already secured his financial future.
Yeah. All right, let's go back in time quickly for this week's look at Brewers history. It is Remember When. We're going back to July 8th, 2013 because of something that happened this week, Kurt, and I think you probably know what it is. TJ Friedl robs Jake Bowers of a home run and what would have been a game-tying home run for the last out of the game. At Great American Ballpark, that snapped their 8-game winning streak. It robbed the Milwaukee population of a chance to get free George Webb's burgers. But it brings me back to another time when a certain Brewers center fielder robbed a certain Reds slugger for the last out of the game. And I think you know who it is. It's Carlos Gomez robbing Joey Votto.
Oh, very fun moment. Keon Broxton
had a couple of steals a couple years later that were sensational. I think even more
not the Reds.
It wasn't the Reds. There was a July 3rd against the Twins that comes to mind, but for the penultimate
he had three of them. He had three. Yeah.
He was a thief. He was really, really good. This was Carlos Gomez, who won a gold glove in 2013, and this was one reason why Francisco Rodriguez, K-Rod, is pitching with a 4-3 Brewers lead. There's two outs in the ninth. There's a runner on first base, and Joey Votto has stepped into the box, and he hits a long drive to center field. He thinks it's gone. Everyone thinks it's gone, but Carlos Gomez goes up, and he gets it. He catches it. Joey Votto did not believe that he caught it, famously runs out into the field pointing at the glove like, make sure he has the ball, at which point Gomez flashes a smile and also the ball in his glove. Jonathan Lucroy, who had homered earlier in the game, you could see him chatting on the mound with K-Rod after the fact. He's not happy. I don't know if it was a bad pitch or if it was just relieved or whatever, but he was just like kind of disgusted with the whole thing. Gomez celebrated the entire post game with the ball in his hand, did all the handshakes. He was having a great time, a very memorable home run theft, probably up there with the great defensive plays in Brewers history. Obviously, there's that Lorenzo Cain steal on opening day that a lot of people remember. Gomez had a 7.6 WAR in 2013.
Crazy.
According to Baseball Reference. Absolutely absurd number. He had an 843 OPS, 24 homers for his career year. He made the All-Star team, took ninth in the MVP voting. Yes, he won that gold glove, as I said. Joey Votto took sixth that year. This was peak Joey Votto. Played in all 162 games, had like a 435 on base percentage. Andrew McCutchen, a former Brewer, future Brewer in that case, won that year. But yeah, that was a fun game. Kyle Loesch had started. There's a name. John Axford allowed an inherited runner to score in the seventh. That made it 4-3. So Jim Henderson, by the way, was pitching great that year. Current Brewers assistant pitching coach Jim Henderson. He had a clean inning, and then came K-Rod. Got a little dicey, as it sometimes does. He got the first two outs. Walked Derek Robinson, a player I absolutely do not remember. And then Derek Robinson. Ooh. Derek like Turnbow with an I-C-K on the end. Gomez had actually had a bad day offensively. He'd had like, I think he struck out with a runner at third with one out, grounded out, popped out. Like it hadn't been very good. But he said afterwards he'd already had 13 homers. He said, I hit 13 and that's four that I steal. It was his fourth stolen home run of the year. So he considered himself up to 17 home runs for the year, which is a good quote. Rodriguez, by the way, he was asked afterwards if he thought it was gone. He's like, homer, no doubt. He hit it. I put my head down, went to turn around, and I saw Gomi leaping up against the wall or leaning against the wall waiting to jump. Gomez, by the way, had stolen a homer at Coors Field when he was with the Rockies 2008 to end a game. Yorvit Torrealba was batting. And that
Brewers legend.
Brewers legend, Yorvitor Alba. We got some great Brewers legends on this rundown. So this was not his first rodeo, but still a very memorable one for the Milwaukee Brewers. Okay, that's it. That's our step back in time. Now, let's close it down the way we do every week, and that is with Kurt's take of the week. Here we go. Kurt Blanche.
Bad we didn't have outs above average to tell me that was a 90% catch probability. ruin the moment.
There is always an opportunity for us to take a little bit of a swipe at outs above average, which does not understand how to gauge home run saving catches. But go on, Kurt.
Yeah, whatever. JR, pinch running.
Pinch running.
I understand why teams do it, but yeah, they should do it less or do it better.
It should, yes.
Like, Reese Hoskins is your best hitter. The Brewers have lifted him for a pinch runner. Statistically, he is pinch five times they've lifted him for a pinch runner in the last 30 days.
Now, to be clear, he's very slow.
That's once a week. He's very slow. He's in the fourth percentile of sprint speed. He is very, very, very slow. Two of those times, though, JR, have been in the seventh inning, at which point, as it was Sunday's game, he was either guaranteed to hit again in this game, or the Brewers win in, like, they win in the top of the ninth, so that part of the lineup doesn't come back up. Or there's a double play in the top of the seventh, and then they get retired in order in the eighth and retired in the order in the ninth, at which point the pinch runner is negated because there was a double play. There's no point to the pinch runner. My point being, there seems to be just a one-size-fits-all approach to Reese Hoskins on base, close game, seventh inning or later, pinch run. And I don't think it's that simple. This isn't even necessarily like the Brewers and Pat Murphy. Long-held belief that pinch running very, very rarely actually like matters, does something. You are taking a far bigger risk than you are getting upside because, look, to get it to work, you need that guy's speed to score the run that would not have scored otherwise. And you need run to matter a lot. Like, the Brewers tie that game. Okay. That's great. You still need another run. It's the seventh inning. Reese Hoskins is going to hit again. Andrew Monasterio also not that fast. His sprint speed is like 35th percentile. He's not stealing bases.
Nor has anyone who has pinch run for Reese Hoskins this year in those five opportunities. They have not.
It's been Monasterio and Ortiz, and Ortiz is faster, but he's not like a great base stealer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's my issue is the guy that you're putting him in with. These are not burners. And I get it. Like, Reese Hoskins, if he's on second base and it's a single, he's probably not scoring. I get that. But you're not like upgrading that high. Certainly not to the degree that you'd be willing to sacrifice in an offense that doesn't have bats. Like we've talked about, one of the real bats that this offense has. It feels like Pat Murphy's just like, oh yeah, he's super slow. Let's get somebody who's marginally faster because we want a good base runner here. But then you're not even using those skills because you're not trying to steal. You're not pushing the envelope. Like you said, it only matters if that guy scores because he takes an extra base that Hoskins wouldn't have been able to do. Like, it's a really narrow collection of outcomes where this could actually matter. You might as well just leave the masher in because it sure stunk when Andrew Monasterio came up in the huge spot later in the game with runners on base and he struck out on three pitches.
It's there are certainly instances in which pinch running works, but I have always disliked the move because of generally, like, I'm just not a fan of it as much as managers in the big leagues do it, especially when you're taking out a good hitter. Maybe it's a little less now that games don't go 12, 13, 14 innings. Like, if you do it in the ninth inning, that guy's probably not going to play again. So you might as well, you know, lift the slow guy for the fast one. But the seventh inning with your best hitter, that's too early. That is simply too early.
I'm with you. I'm usually for it if it's like bottom of the 10th and it's the guy who starts at second and maybe it's tied and you just need that run to score. Like, okay, I get it. You know, put in somebody with wheels. Because Reese Hoskins would not be the guy you want starting at second base. He's just not going to score. But I didn't get it in this case, and definitely came back to haunt them. All right, Kurt, any last thoughts before I send you away?
I'm on my patio.
Nice patio. You're on your patio. It's dark, but you're still on that patio.
Yeah, I mean, what I got to get like, I said I'm done, but I'm not done. I got to get lights. Got to get a pergola, you know, just those sort of things.
Of course, we got to have a pergola. All right, let's talk to one of the dudes of the hour, and that's Caleb Durbin, who hit that walk-off home run. Whether or not I have a strong faith in his profile, I still talk to him at length about a few things. He grew up in Lake Forest, Illinois. He just got celebrated this week with the Fond du Lac Dock Spiders, the North Woods League team in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. He played two summers with them. And actually, he was on a team with Victor Scott, who's now with the Cardinals, and Chandler Simpson, who's like the fastest man in baseball, a Rays prospect. He's back in the minors. But three just tremendously fast dudes. They were on the same team together. So I asked about that and asked about his experiences in Wisconsin and a little bit more. So hopefully you enjoy this conversation. Kurt, thank you for joining me this week. Enjoy that patio. Enjoy your week. The Brewers have, who's coming to town? The Braves, and then the St. Louis Cardinals. 7 games this week, 4 with the Cardinals this weekend, all at American Family Field. This long homestand continues. So some great opportunities for people to get out and see the game. Kurt, thank you for joining me, man. We'll talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye. My guest is Caleb Durbin, third baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers. You know him well by now. And I want to talk a little bit about the Fond du Lac Dock Spiders to start with, but I'm going to go back even further to your days in Illinois growing up. I'm wondering kind of what your relationship was to Wisconsin sports growing up, if you came to games, you know, across the border here in Wisconsin, what sort of the how close you were, or how many times you got a chance to even compete maybe across the border?
Yeah, I mean, travel ball, I got to compete a ton, you know, in Wisconsin. There's a lot of good baseball in Wisconsin, and grew up, you know, just down the road from Kenosha, really, you know, within 15, 20 minutes from the border. So really close, and a lot of, you know, good baseball in Wisconsin. So I know the travel ball teams I played for growing up would always go across the border, and I know hitters is in Racine is a really good spot, and
for sure,
you know, so there's a lot of good clubs just across the border, and had the opportunity to play a lot of baseball in Wisconsin, and you know, went to quite a few Brewers games growing up. Obviously, being in, you know, north suburb of Chicago, a lot of my friends are Bears fans and Cubs fans and stuff. My dad's from Pittsburgh, so I was more of a Steelers fan. Watched a lot of football growing up. So never really committed to the Bears growing up, but, you know, definitely liked watching the Packers and Brewers growing up.
Wisconsin fans love to hear that, although now with Aaron Rodgers signing with the Steelers. Yeah. But, and you got TJ Watt, too. Lots of Wisconsin connections on the Steelers. What about the Dock Spiders now? You just, as we're recording this, it was a Caleb Durbin night. You were there for 2 years, right? 2 years playing summer ball. What was it that made the Northwoods League an attractive option for you? And then I want to know a little about you on the same team as Chandler Simpson and Victor Scott. Like, that's three of the fastest dudes around playing on the same Northwoods team. I'm curious to know more about that.
Yeah, the Northwoods was really big for me. I played Division III baseball, so getting that competition and exposure in the summer was huge for me. And then, yeah, playing with Chandler and Victor, they were really fast at the time, and I knew that. And now it's, you know, you never know what's going to come about. So, you know, all three of us kind of making it up, you know, around similar times. I know Victor got up last year, but really cool to see kind of, you know, we were 1, 2, 3 in the lineup in Fond du Lac, and now we're, you know, trying to do our thing in the big leagues. It's a lot of fun.
Did you guys just spend all summer stealing bases?
Pretty much. I think Chandler stole like 60 bags in 50 games or something. Yeah, ridiculous.
I wonder if you seeing him steal all those bases and setting whatever record it was, Northwoods League, I'm not sure, or if it was just a Fond du Lac record, that encouraged you to set an AFL record when you had your opportunity. Was that in the back of your mind? Like, or maybe a better question is, did you go to the AFL thinking, I'm going to do something pretty special here with the stolen bases?
I think a little bit. I think that playing with those guys helped a lot, and I think that even seeing them kind of go head to head, both nearing 100 bags in a minor league season, you know, a couple years ago, and then Chandler getting 100 plus last year, kind of just, you know, in my mind, I'm, you know, up there with those guys. Those guys have legit speed for sure, but that's also a big part of my game. So it's, you know, whenever you see someone, you know, pushing the barriers of what's possible, it's really cool, and you don't know, it pushes you to try to be better too.
since you've been here, how many times has Pat Murphy mentioned Dustin Pedroia to you? Has that happened a lot?
Yeah, a few times, a few times. I think he knows that that's a guy that I looked up to, and obviously similar profile size-wise and kind of tools-wise too, and just the way we play the game. And I think he's obviously had experience coaching Dustin, and you know, now I'm, you know, kind of has a blueprint of the type of guy he's coaching, and obviously want to follow in his footsteps because he had an amazing career with the Red Sox. So definitely kind of a cool little connection there.
I skipped over your college. You mentioned Division III, WashU. Did I read that you needed like a 32 ACT to even get into that school? Is that right?
I had a 32, yeah. That was kind of low too for the guys on that team. We had a lot of
brainiacs. That's an impressive number for the low end. That's a very smart baseball team.
Yeah, we had a lot of brainiacs. They're a really good group of guys that, I mean, they're doing crazy things outside of baseball now.
Yeah.
But made it to the World Series for the first time, you know, my junior year. So I had a good baseball squad too.
Yeah. You have an economics and finance degree, is that right?
Yeah.
That's what you studied. Mm-hmm. What would you be doing? What type of economics, what type of finance were you interested in?
I mean, I was always good with numbers. Like you talk about the ACT, I got a 35 on the math portion. So
dang. We're in a whole different ballgame.
Subtle flex. No,
you should. If I had 35 on the ACT, I might bring it up as often as I could. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, but I'm not really sure what I would do with it. I always knew academics was important to me and wanted to have that fallback. Baseball was always kind of the number one. Was,
of course.
Was the path.
Yeah.
That was always plan A, but kind of having that backup going to WashU is always the goal.
What did wrestling do for you? Because I know it was pretty big for you in high school, right?
Yeah. Both my brother and my dad both wrestled at Northwestern, so I wrestled for 8 years growing up, and it was big. I really enjoyed it. I always thought it was fun, but I think just the discipline of the tough workouts, you're cutting weight, you're not able to even eat what you normally would. Or at all at times. So it's and, you know, wrestle on match day. So I love that part of it. I like push myself and the type of work ethic it takes to be able to push yourself. And I think it's, you know, it helps me a ton in baseball as well.
Before the season, obviously, is when you're traded here. What was your expectation with the Yankees this year? Did you think maybe you could crack that starting, you know, break camp with them? Like what were sort of, as you came into this preseason, what were you thinking was your destination?
Yeah, that was the goal, I think, especially after getting added to the 40-man. You know, you're put on the 40-man, you're kind of competing for a spot in spring. That's kind of the general idea. So I knew Glaber was, you know, signed somewhere else, and second base was open. I knew, obviously, Jazz and Cabrera. There's other guys in the mix, Peraza, Vivas. But, you know, I was told it would be an open competition, so that was kind of – what I was preparing for in the offseason pre-trade.
So last question here, just looking at the last couple of weeks here in Milwaukee, is it about getting comfortable with third base? And maybe that's why we've seen kind of the success that you've had the last little bit. Is it more complicated than that? What would you attribute it to?
I think game reps is huge. Especially, you know, I've gotten a lot more comfortable at third over the last couple of years, but I mean, just getting to the big leagues in general, it takes a little bit of time to kind of settle in. And I think having everyday reps over there at third has done me a lot of good, just, you know, comfortability wise and getting used to the different types of plays that you make there and the way you kind of want to tap the ball over there.
All right, Caleb Durbin, thank you so much, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me.